Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another episode of The Leadership Journey on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I'm joined by our co-host for this series, Brian Kite, BK. Week 10, at least here in Ohio, around the country, we are getting into the playoffs. We're finishing up the regular season, and it's just an exciting time of the year to be involved in the game.
It is. I think this time of year, Keith, for me, we're what, it's week 10 in Ohio?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm in Charlotte in North Carolina. I'm not sure what week it is here. Probably right around the same. You know, it's week, what, 8 or 9 in the college football world. It's almost week 8. What, is it 7 weeks in the NFL?
Seven or eight.
And this is always a time of year, end of October, beginning of November, where I find it's every year it's a pivotal time. It's a transition time and it's a reflective time, because now there's a body of work that we can all look at in ourselves and in others about what happened and what actually took place, right? The dreams of the off season, right? The hope or the concern or the worry or the promise, all that is done. And there's just the record. There's just the experience of what has happened. And for some, it was disappointing. For others, it was just okay. And for some, for a few, it's fantastic. And there's a lot of ball left to be played. But this is an interesting time of year because there's not the expectations or the thoughts of what would happen. There's only what did happen, which we can look back and there's lessons learned, right? And then there's also the thought going forward. And for some people, the thought has transitioned to what we learned this year and what we want to bring into the off season. And some are starting to think about what they're going to do this off season to prepare better for next season based on what they've learned. And for some people, for some teams, it's what have we learned about ourselves so far so that we can double down, triple down, and continue to accelerate and compete for championships at the end of the season. So I find that wherever you are as a team, disappointed with where you are or in position to go compete more for a championship, this is a very reflective time to start thinking about what have we learned so far? What did we see this year? What did this year of coaching show me and teach me about how to either prepare better for next year or about how to continue to prepare to compete for championships this year?
To relate it to something that is very football-esque, it essentially is a self-scout for where you're at with your culture, with your leadership, with all those kinds of things. We do it all the time for our offense, our defense, our special teams, taking a look back, really diagnosing where have we been strong, where have we been weak, what tendencies have developed within our offense, defense, special teams. But now it's the opportunity really to take a look at that in terms of our culture. It's very much the same way that it's the opportunity to analyze, like you said, all those things that have happened and learn from it.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the topic for today that I'd like to address is equally relevant to the team that has its eyes turned towards next season. And look, for teams that may be sitting at, let me put it this way: for teams that are sitting in a spot where the season is not done, but the season will be over soon, the non-playoff teams, the eyes turning towards next season doesn't mean that in any way you are not living in the moment and competing for this season. But I think it's very real for coaches who understand that they're not going to be competing in the playoffs this year. to say, hey, I want to continue to compete right now. But the eyes kind of turn towards, hey, what are we learning about who we're going to become in the off season? And now this season is finishing, but it's also, this season also becomes a rep for next season. And we start looking at, hey, why did we end up 3-7 this year, or 5-5, or whatever it was? And how can we improve on that for next year? And how can I do a better job? I think that's part of the reason I want to talk staff alignment for that group. And then there's the other group who is competing in, who's going to make the playoffs. And they're looking at, hey, how do we continue to stay aligned as a staff? And how do we continue to make sure that our staff is in a good position to assist our players to compete in the playoffs and really go see if we can make a run? And the reason I want to talk about this, Keith, particularly now, is I want to start opening this conversation. And it's one I've been having a lot with a lot of my coach clients, a lot of the teams that I work with, a lot of the coaches that I talk to. And it's this. It's an observation that I've had for a while that I've just recently started sharing more. And it's that what I see at every level is more time is invested into trying to get players aligned that I think we underinvest and underobserve whether or not the staff is aligned. I think we treat staff alignment in two ways. We either assume staff is aligned because they're there and they're adults and they're working, therefore they probably are aligned or they should be aligned. Or number two is we know that they're not aligned, but we don't do the work or enough work to create the alignment, even though we see that misalignment exists within the staff.
Yeah, BK, that's something I mentioned to you before we got going, something I've lived as a coach. I can think back to my third year as a head coach. I had spent, and I related this story to you, I spent so much time really developing the culture of that particular team in the off season, the leadership of that particular team, because it was really needed. I told you, going in, this was a team that had not had winning season ever as football players from the time they started playing football all the way up through even when they were JVs. Their junior year they did, but this was their opportunity to lead, and when it was their program, they didn't have that, and there were some off the field issues, nothing egregious, but those typical things that can get in the way of the program. And I spent so much time focused on and working with that group, and I felt like we had a really good staff. I did bring in a couple pieces and make some changes, but I did exactly what you said. I assumed that those guys would be okay. And before you knew it, I saw some problems. I kind of, I don't want to say ignored them, but kind of didn't really address them directly. And because of that, while the season turned out well, we had a lot of work to do moving forward. And, those are things that are tough, and it could have been avoided by doing a better job up front and understanding what my staff needed, what that group of people needed to be able to be aligned and to do their jobs in the right way, too. And you can't take it for granted, and I see it happen all the time. And usually, you could talk to any staff. This goes, without saying. And in most staffs, there's a guy or a couple guys who aren't getting along. Somebody, whether it's a coordinator or the head coach, knows about it and wants to avoid any kind of confrontation, and they just set it aside and think, well, we'll address it later. We'll address it after the season. And unfortunately, it usually chips away at your culture. And one way or the other, whether it doesn't come to the forefront, it's still in the background. It's going to chip away at what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, and You know, I think Keith, one, I appreciate you sharing. I appreciate you putting it out there. But because I think we can call it ignoring. You know, I think there's two ways to ignore, and this is true for me, right? I mean, is it can we say that if we see something but do nothing about it, like nothing real about it, right? Like we don't own it and take responsibility for it and addressing it. I mean, can we really say that we're not ignoring it?
No, actually, you can't.
We can't. I don't think we can, right? Like when I have something in my life that I see and I can see that it's happening and that it's not good for me, and then I don't do anything about it, just because I see it and acknowledge it in my mind doesn't mean I'm not ignoring it. In fact, I could make a case that for all of us and for me in my life, the only kind of ignoring, in fact, this might even be the definition, now that I'm actually saying this out loud, it actually might be the definition of ignoring for us, to see something and do nothing about it.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just a total lack of awareness. If that's it, then I'm not ignoring it. Ignoring, I think, is when we see but don't truly, truly acknowledge to the point of doing something about it. Because, look, if you are in any profession, if there's something going on that's a detriment to you or to your effort and you have no idea it even exists— like, let's just take this example. If you have a lack of alignment on your staff and there's something going on in your staff that is, you know, significantly or in some measurable way undermining your ability to compete, and you have no idea it even exists on your staff, it's either a complete and total lack of awareness that everyone is hiding it from you and they are extremely gifted, or you are incompetent. Right? Like, if you have no awareness of it, you're either incompetent, or it's just an extreme lack of awareness because everybody else is hiding it from you, in which case they're incompetent. Okay?
Right.
But more often than not, what happens in life and becomes you know, the topic here of issues that show up within staff alignment is most of the time we sense the issue. We see the issue. We feel the issue. We hear the issue. And then we don't address, own, work, wrestle with, grind on, listen, empathize, challenge, press, and ultimately resolve the issues when it comes to staff alignment. And I think there's a handful of reasons why. Let's just explore some of the reasons why and you know, just kind of talk through some of these things. But let me make this big point early, okay? Here's the big point, just in case somebody, you know, has to jump out of their car or needs to jump off this podcast for whatever reason so that you can come back to this. Here's what my observation is. My observation is this. In coaching football, there is no more important future for this game and for your competitive excellence than the alignment of your staff. It is the number one, absolute, most competitive advantage that you gain. Without it, nothing else matters. With it, everything becomes possible. Without it, nothing else matters. It is the future of the teams that are going to win and lose, is the staffs that can create and push staff alignment first. And here's why, Keith. Because everything in this game is harder to hold together now than it was even 10 years ago. Everything is harder to hold together. I was having a conversation with a Power Five head football coach this weekend who was, well, I was talking to, and we were talking about, and he was kind of just putting on the table all of the stuff happening around college football right now and how challenging it is for him as a coach. and he's a super successful coach. And he was talking about how hard all of it is. And it was just how hard it is on him. And he's just kind of, you know, what do I do with all of this? And that's just him, let alone having to hold together a staff of 10, 15. And the compounding factors that jump on that. I was talking to a Power 5 strength and conditioning coach over the weekend who was quietly and secretly expressing to me that the biggest issue on his team isn't the players. It's the staff. And that only a couple people really see it and acknowledge it and know it. And that it's a lack of professionalism in his point of aligning and accelerating and enhancing what the head ball coach wants to do and making it successful. And that until that gets addressed, all of the scheme, all of the effort, all of the recruiting, all of the culture effort with the players, it's like empty calories. It's sugar water until the staff alignment gets fixed. And so something I believe deeply. And just this weekend alone, two conversations with two different staff members, a head coach and a head strength and conditioning coach from Power 5 teams, at the college level. And I think stuff is even bigger at the high school level because there's a lot of local politics that go on, right? A lot of local stuff that happens. It's the single biggest issue that is not being addressed. And right now, there's at least a two to one, probably more like 3, 4, or 5 to 1 ratio of alignment messages and quote unquote training and effort being put into players than there is into staff. And I think on a great team, there's at least a 1 to 1 ratio of work the staff does to get aligned to work the players are doing. Let me phrase that better. There's at least a 1 to 1 ratio between the amount of effort you put into getting your staff aligned as you put in effort you put into getting your players aligned. On most teams, though, that ratio is more like 5 to 1. Five times the effort is put into getting the players aligned than the effort put into getting the staff aligned. Don't you see that too, or do you not see that, Keith?
No,
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I definitely see it, Brian. And when I think of that, it goes back to, you know, a topic you and I talked about earlier this season, the player-led teams. And some of this stuff over the course of the season doesn't, between the coaches not being aligned, doesn't start to come to the forefront maybe till they've hit adversity. And sometimes that particular team may avoid any of it in that year and come through it, you know, like everything is aligned. But next year's team is going to be different. And I think just hearing you talk about this, I think that's where you see like a program that graduates a really good team, and they put it all on the talent, where I wonder how much really goes to maybe that staff wasn't aligned. You had a great player-led team, and now it's time for the coaches to lead, and everybody's not pulling in the same direction. Now you have some issues. And I mentioned to you, you know, I was talking to Power 5 coordinator this past weekend, and they made some changes on their staff, and to maybe not give away who it is, I won't even mention the position he's in, but I said, the biggest thing you guys, I see in you guys, and just watching and hearing the player interviews, watching the sideline during the game, watching your interaction with the players, is there seems to be more trust and communication happening. Your schemes are great. Some of the new things you're doing are great, but that's not what's winning you the ball games. It's the changes you made, and really we could call that alignment. And I don't know the previous coach who was there who let go, but something with that obviously made a difference in alignment. We don't want to be in that position where it's mid-season. You don't see it at the high school, really. You see it in college and the pros, but really at any point where you have to let people go. In my opinion, there's always a way to develop, and maybe you do come to a point where you have to part ways, but usually it's because, it's back to that word, you've ignored something along the way and you've reached an impasse. You've really damaged the relationship to the point that to part ways is the only option. And I've made those mistakes, and it's something really worth paying attention to, especially right now at this time of the year. You can find it, you can see it, go out and address it, fix those things now, because whether it's next week or 5 weeks from now, it all starts again. And if you don't have that in place, you know, you're really starting from behind.
Yes. And let's talk for a minute, Keith, about what do I mean by alignment? Maybe I'm interested in hearing, you know, your view of alignment, but I say, what do I mean? Just since I brought the topic up, what I want to make sure everybody understands what I mean by alignment, you know, what alignment is and what it isn't. Let's start with what it isn't, because there's a lot of times what I'll see happening in this on teams, I'll see this happening in businesses as well, is I'll see people using a very cheap and shallow kind of they'll use a display of alignment rather than actual alignment, if that makes sense, right? They'll try to display some alignment or posture for alignment while just to buy them space to go do what they wanted to do. Does that make sense? You ever see that?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Where people posture alignment. So what I mean, here's what isn't alignment. What isn't alignment is staying out of the way while the head coach does what the head coach wants to do, and then staying compliant in the meeting or in whatever it is, and then going back and kind of back into your room or back into wherever it is, or you know, again, outside of the moment where the head coach is right there. A lot of times you'll see an example of this would be the head coach will deliver a message to the team, right? Culture message or whatever. And I'll hear a staff member say, you know, what is it about alignment? Well, it's like, well, the head coach's job is culture, and I'll let the head coach do that. And then when he's done with that, he'll do culture, and then I'll just go and I'll teach the scheme. And they'll think that alignment is just letting the coach do what the coach is going to do, and then I'll come over here and I'll do scheme in my room. That's not alignment. That's you getting out of the way and letting the coach do something, and then you going back and not aligning with it. That's just you making him do the culture work. What isn't alignment is complying with something that you don't agree with, and you know, from a scheme perspective or a decision perspective, and then not putting your full effort into the thing that you don't agree with, and then it isn't successful, and you say, "I told you so." This happens way too often. A decision gets made, you don't agree with it. Because you don't agree with it, you don't give it your best effort. A lot of times people will posture like it's their best effort. They'll act like it's their best effort, but they won't like it. And so they won't really put all the, because they never really, really believe in it, but it's going to happen anyway. And so they kind of do a halfway effort or an 80% effort. I think this one is particularly dangerous because players sense in coaches when a coach is not behind the decision and when a coach doesn't really believe in it. And so when a player starts to sense that, the player loses confidence in the actual scheme or whatever it happens to be that the coach is doing. And then the effort is the scheme or the game plan or whatever it is not executed particularly well. And then when it's not executed particularly well, those kind of half-resistant coaches say, "I knew this scheme would never work. I told you." But you were responsible for the reason it didn't execute well. I saw this with players. You ever see this with players, where a player didn't like the scheme and so didn't really commit to playing the scheme out, and then the scheme didn't work, and the player tried to say, "I told you so"?
I think you see it from players and from coaches. I've seen both.
Yeah. Yeah, more from the I can remember that. I mean, I can remember my playing days. I can remember guys I played with who didn't like a game plan, and then would just complain and bitch about the game plan the whole time. And then they would, or a technique that we would play, and then they would play some poor version of the technique or some poor version, sloppy version of the scheme, and then it wouldn't work because they didn't really try at their top level or commit to it. it didn't work, and then they'd try to say, I told you so.
Yeah, I just saw that this past weekend, thinking of the Broncos and what Joe Flacco had to say after the game, where, you know, the comment from wherever I was reading this was that he threw his coaches under the bus and, you know, was complaining about game plan and their decisions. And, you know, the reporter was quick to point out that, you know, he didn't necessarily convert in those situations either, but, you know, he's quick to point out where he didn't like this decision or that decision or the game plan or whatever it might have been. So, yeah, it's a very dangerous thing, obviously, to your culture when those kinds of things happen.
Yeah. And then obviously there's more egregious lack of alignment, right? I wanted to address the subtle lack of alignment, the subtle lack of alignment that I want assistant coaches, coordinators, head coaches to watch for. The subtle lack of alignment is the lack of alignment in silence, where it looks like people are compliant, where people are just agreeable, or they are, or they kind of sit on the side while somebody else carries the weight of any particular thing in total. It could be culture, could be scheme, could be a tough decision with a player. It could be anything. The subtle lack of alignment is where everybody just stays silent, even if they don't completely agree with it, or they don't want to participate in it, and they make somebody else carry the full weight. That's a lack of alignment. It's an imbalance of responsibility on too few people within the program. It's not pulling on the same rope. It's not a united front. It's not those things. And then obviously there's the sort of nod when you're in the room and then get out of the room and share a slightly different message or a significantly different message. There's that. And then obviously there's egregious lack of alignment, right? There's the not agreeing with the way something is done and doing it the way you want to do it. I've seen this as a player where something gets shared by a head coach or by a coordinator and then the room changes and there's some other people there and either the position coach or the coordinator says, yeah, I know we said this, but really what we're going to do is that. And it's more egregious, right? It's more direct lack of alignment. And so we got to watch for that. So what do we want to look for in alignment? What we want to look for in alignment is this. I mean, let's use a high level rule, like a rule of thumb, something that this is what I mean by a system, something that helps guide everything. And that's this: alignment is when really two things happen. Number one, everything you are doing is enhancing and accelerating the priorities that the leadership of the team has decided. And I say the leadership of the team, meaning the head coach and the people in charge of setting the priorities and the standards. So the first thing, alignment is everything that you do, and I'm going to say the you, meaning everything that each person on the staff does, is enhancing the it is accelerating the priorities and the standards of the team. You have to enhance and you have to accelerate as an individual staff member. Number two is that you know what your job is in enhancing and accelerating what this team is doing. So the first, you have to enhance and accelerate. The second, you have to know what your role and job in that is. And I've said this before. I remember the last time we talked about this. Let me give a very specific example. If you coach the cornerbacks and you hear the head coach talking a culture message and an attitude message and a mindset message in the team room, your job is to enhance and accelerate that message inside your room of the cornerbacks and turn that message from the head coach into real, tangible attitudes and actions among the cornerbacks in that room during practice and during games. It's not the head coach's job to carry the culture. It's your job as the cornerback's coach to create the culture the head coach wants inside the cornerback's room and while the cornerbacks play on the field, so that every single time somebody watches the corners play, they think and say to themselves, those corners are playing with the culture that the head coach is driving. The corners embody the culture of this team. Where did that come from? It came from the way the corners are coached by their cornerback coach. That is alignment. What's not alignment is the corner coaching technique and scheme and game plan and strategy and press and bail and opening the hips, but not really teaching the corners the details of the culture of this football team, because that's the head coach's job. That's not alignment. It's a lack of alignment. And it creates a gap in players' minds. I hear my head coach talking culture all the time. I hear my head coach talking leadership. I hear my head coach talking about this, but my position coach doesn't really ever talk about that. He's kind of a hard ass. He just gets in and he just does this, this, and this. Next thing you know, the players are torn. They've got a head coach who talks leadership and culture, and they got a position coach who rarely does. Who are they following, Keith?
Well, I think they actually could follow either one, and it's not good that maybe, you know, that position coach who's out there spending all the time on the technique is kind of trumped by the head coach. But also there's that possibility that, you know, that position coach who is not promoting the bigger overall culture, because he's not doing those things, kind of de-emphasizes that to the players. So I could see it really happening either way. And I don't think either one is good, because if all of that comes from the coach and he's very charismatic and the players really only are following him, they don't have maybe they're not as compelled to say that, you know, what this other coach is telling me is as important. So I think you need the balance of that from your players. They need to see the big picture, but that coach needs to, like you said, he really needs to be hammering that home and driving it home with those players, especially as it relates to their particular job on the team.
Well, and I see the inverse happening also, right? I see the head coach who does not care about the culture and the leadership, et cetera. And the head coach is the hard ass who thinks all this other stuff is soft. And then there's the position coach who really believes in, you know, the power of, you know, attitude and mindset and the ability for this, you know, that part of the game. And then I bet you I get equal messages, equal questions from both head coaches who don't have alignment with their assistant coaches, meaning head coaches who are frustrated they can't get assistant coaches to take more responsibility for certain things. And I get messages and questions from assistant coaches who are talking about a lack of alignment upward to their head coaches, because the head coach doesn't believe in, you know, culture or they're a yeller and a screamer, et cetera. And I see that with other players, right? Or other scenarios where the player is dealing with a head coach who is more command and control oriented and pure scheme. And you have an assistant coach who believes in culture. And a lot of times the assistant coaches, and this is where it's interesting, the assistant coaches want the head coach to take more cultural responsibility, and they get really frustrated when they don't. And I've got to tell the assistant coaches, listen, your job is to align. It's frustrating, but look, your job is to align. Meaning what? If you're the cornerbacks coach, well, let's switch it, right? If you're the O-line coach, okay, and you really believe in culture, or you really believe in patience and empathy, whatever it is, and the head coach doesn't, you don't get to trump the head coach. That's how it works. You don't get to trump the head coach. Here's what you have to do. What you have to do is enhance and accelerate the priorities that the head coach wants to drive. And then you have to know what your role is to make that happen. That's what alignment is. The first thing you have to do is align, because if you're not aligned, you have no hope of making the impact that you want to have, which means fulfill the obligation. What's the head coach want? Wants tough, hard, solid execution with discipline. Great. If you think culture is a great way to do it, then do it. But you have to get that done if that's what the head coach wants. That's what you've got to get done. The head coach isn't going to coach the way you want him to coach. He's going to coach the way that he coaches. If you find that the way he coaches is something you cannot abide with, get out. Or point it out to him and say, hey, I think this is a problem and it's holding us back. And don't let your ego or your fear of expressing that get in your way. Lay it out. Present some alternatives. Engage in some conversation. Suggest some other options. But the head coach has to decide. And then your job is enhance and accelerate what that head coach wants and know your role in making it happen. That's what alignment is.
So BK, as I'm hearing you talk about this, and we related this to the self-scout, this is not something that is only for the head coach to do right now. And because, as you said, your head coach might not place a lot of value on this. He might be a little bit different in how he does things, but it is definitely, whether you are a position coach or the coordinator, maybe you are the head coach looking, this is the time to look at those things and evaluate. Look at where you are in the scheme of things. Like you said, probably I think the better thing is if you feel that there is not that alignment or there's things that you really feel deeply about that could affect your future there, it's not bad to have that conversation with the coach. Otherwise, we're in that ignore state. And probably the only alternative then is to leave. And maybe that's not the best thing. Maybe there's some things that can be worked out, maybe not. But at least you give it the opportunity to see and hear what is the viewpoint of that other coach, whether it's, you know, it could be the head coach talking about a certain assistant right now and maybe what he sees in that assistant, or an assistant coach, position coach, looking at maybe the coordinator, the head coach, in terms of what they're doing to, again, have that alignment within the staff in order to be able to move forward from this point, whether it's, like you said, the postseason that's coming up, or the next season, the next off season, which is right on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, look, you have to have the conversation to maintain even the base level of integrity. You have to. If you're going to have that go on and you're not going to have the conversation, I just don't ever want to hear you or see you expressing any kind of principles to a player about what players have to do if you're not going to have that conversation between two coaches. I don't want to hear it. This goes back to one of the first things we talked about this season on the leadership journey of, you know, leaders are on the hook for living the principles that they teach. And, you know, this is just one of the core things I see coaches talking to players about all the time, right? Being a competitor and aligning and discipline. It's doing what you're doing, the right thing, the right way, at the right time, the way you were taught to do it. You know, this is what we tell kids, quote unquote, all the time. And then oftentimes I get in the conversation with coaches and you could fill a stadium with the conversations that aren't had between coaches and among coaching staffs. I mean, just Keith, just in my direct work experience with Division I football coaches, national championships lost because of staff alignment. Jobs lost because of conversations that weren't had. Jobs changed. Relationships broken. Seasons crumble because of lack of alignment from conversations that were had about people not with people. From alignment that people postured but didn't really have. From effort put into getting all the players to do everything they wanted the players to do and underinvesting in the staff to get the staff to do what it needed to do. I cannot say this strongly enough or loudly enough or wide enough. If you want to accelerate your career, your team's performance, and your season, invest in your staff alignment. Go all in on staff alignment. If you can't get your staff aligned, you are not going to get your team aligned. If you can't get your staff members aligned, why would you think that a non-aligned staff is going to create an aligned group of players? It's silly, Keith. It's silly. The competitive landscape is so hard right now. It's so challenging. And I don't just mean on the field. But what's the stuff we talk about, Keith? We talk about stuff going on in social media. We talk about stuff going on socially. We talk about stuff going on in communities, in schools, with parents, with recruiting, with the NCAA, with the transfer portal, with all the politics, and on field. And you're going to go out and try to compete and tell players to align without having a group of 8 to 15 people in your leadership group aligned? It just violates the basic principles of organizations. And I see way too many staffs trying to do this right now. Way too many staffs. And it breaks my heart because the players are counting on you, you know?
Right.
From an emotional perspective, it really hurts me. It breaks my heart because the players are counting on this. And they're looking to you as people who are, and I don't think this is fair, but this is how you're viewed. You're people who are supposed to have this figured out. Right? Like they're looking at you as these adults who are vessels of principles that we want players to embody. So be that. And then I get really disheartened and frustrated. And this is where you hear me. That's why I don't let coaches off the hook. I get really frustrated and disheartened when I see coaches hammering players on social media and preaching at players on social media and tweeting and putting these, you know, crafted, you know, quotes up at players on social media about all these different things that I consistently see coaches not doing themselves on their own staffs. And it drives me crazy. And those of you who, if this is your first time listening to me, you can go back and listen to other episodes. But those of you who already know, it's the thing, honestly, Keith, it's the thing I want to be known for. I really do. Like, I want to be known as the guy who doesn't let coaches off the hook. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't get the excuse. No, you don't get to be trusted just because you're a coach. I'm on the hook just like you are. If anything, you have a bigger responsibility with a higher standard on you than everybody else does, coach. Much higher. So as an assistant coach, as a coordinator, as a head coach, you want everything else to be smoother. When you start working on right now in season and start getting your mind right for the off season, staff alignment. If you're currently an assistant coach and you're putting your playbook together for how you want to run a team, put staff alignment at the top of the list. And if you doubt me or you don't think my voice is credible on this, go look at teams that are winning over and over and over and over and over again and look at what the leading factor for them is. Talent will be going up and down for teams like that. Comes and goes. Look at what the number one factor is. Even the people on the staff, a lot of times varies. Not always consistent staff members, because that's not controllable, right?
Right.
It's staff alignment. And let me make one last point, Keith, because there's something you mentioned. I wanted to come back to it. I almost forgot. And I'll wrap up. I'm done here for the day. But you made a point of, you know, there's always work that can be done. We can always, you know, we can always work on this. We can always, there's always something that we can do to, you know, take responsibility and start creating that alignment. And I agree. There is a point where, you know, some staffs and some people just don't align. And it's always for two reasons. Okay. It's always for two reasons. It's always one, because people didn't want to do the work, or two, that person never should have been on the staff in the first place. They never had an interest in aligning, and you just found that out now, or, you know, you knew it all along, but you made the hire anyway. It was either a lack of willingness to work or a bad hire. It's one of the two. It's okay to have a bad hire. It's okay. You're going to have, I mean, there's no way you do this game long enough where you don't make a bad hire at some point. Move on. Make a decision to move on and acknowledge that, hey, that one's on me. That one's on me. I got there's a couple staffs right now that I can just right off the top of my head. They're not going to get alignment from the people that are on their staff. They were bad hires. Not judgmental. They were people who were not going to align. And so to put them onto a staff and then expect or ask them to align was a poor leadership or management coaching decision. Same thing happens with some players sometimes. It's the nature of the game.
BK, great topic. I think very important, not just right now, but at any time of the year. As I've mentioned, you know, I made those mistakes before as a coach, and certainly something that you need to keep in the forefront. BK does all kinds of great stuff. I know he's putting together some things as we head into the offseason. He is here to coach the coaches, but something you can get right now is his daily discipline. It's one of my favorite things in the morning. In fact, today's I retweeted it. And just so you know what the daily discipline is, I mean, it is very short. I'll read today's. It's only going to take 30 seconds. Three reasons to choose discipline over motivation. Discipline made simple. Motivation needs to feel like it. Discipline decides and goes. Motivation waits for energy. Discipline creates the energy it needs. Motivation is at the mercy of uncontrollable factors. Discipline maximizes the factors in its control. Embrace the chase. Do the work. That's a daily discipline. Something very impactful. You could read in 30 seconds most of the time, and it's in your mailbox daily in the morning. One of the first things you can read and get your day going the right way. BK, how can coaches get that?
Easiest way to sign up is at dailydiscipline.com. Put your name, email address in, and you will get it starting the next morning at 6 a.m. Eastern. It is totally and completely free. Email comes Monday through Friday, and would love to have you as part of the community.
Systems are important. We talk about it all the time. You know, a system here for culture. And as I said, BK will be coming out with some stuff here this offseason for our football systems, for blocking, tackling, defeating blocks. Go to footballdevelopment.com. There are things, just like looking at alignment right now, there's things you can do right now, even towards the tail end of the season, to help make your team better. And you can carry some of those in the offseason and the drills that we have designed to work right in with your strength and conditioning program. Check that out at footballdevelopment.com. BK, as always, I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this week and helping us become better coaches and do a better job in this profession.
Great to talk with you, Keith. Always fun. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.